bare light bulb overhead having a ghostly flare around it.
I brought you some water, sir.
Gibbs kneeled in front of me with a couple of paper cups.
I took one hand and sipped the water, trying not to gulp it, then gave him back the cup and took the other.
He tipped the white chef's hat back.
They hit you pretty hard, didn't they, Mr. Longmire?
I handed him back the second cup. Can I get another, please? He stood and went to pour me some more. I stretched my eyes. What's going on, Mr. Gibbs? He glanced around to make sure we were indeed alone in the caboose.
I'm really not at liberty to repeat what I heard, sir. Come on, Gibbs.
Whatever they say, I didn't do it. His red-rimmed, dark eyes focused on mine.
They say there's a man dead.
I leaned back against the batten boards of the caboose and took a deep breath as the rails clicked below us.
What? They found a man on the tracks, dead, with his head stove in.
That was me, but I wasn't dead, just knocked out. He glanced around again.
They said it was one of you sheriffs, but they didn't say who, at least not to me.
Where?
Near Fort Fred Steele, about halfway between Walcott and Rawlins.
No, it was in Medicine Bow. Somebody hit me, and, to make a long story short, I was lying by the tracks for a while, and then I got a ride. I rubbed the back of my head again, trying hard not to feel like a bongo. And then I attempted to get back on the train till I got hit in the head again. Flexing my jaw, I smiled and concentrated on seeing just one of them, finally bringing his face into singular focus. Don't worry about me, Mr. Gibbs. I'll be fine. It's all just a big mix-up. There was a noise behind the old chef, and I looked up to see my boss, a couple of the other sheriffs, Otis Phelps and Bo Brown, to be exact, and the railroad security man. They had entered the car and stood over the two of us, Holland the first to speak. What are you doing here, Gibbs?
I was just giving him some water, Mr. Holland.
Well, that's enough. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
The older man stood slowly and walked around them, leaving us alone in the caboose as I discreetly rattled the cuffs on the steel railing, giving more than a little scrutiny to the two rusted screws that held the thing in place.
Somebody mind telling me what's going on?
You were kind of MIA here for a few hours. How about you tell me where you've been?
I ignored Holland and spoke to my boss.
Sheriff Connolly, do you mind telling me what's going on?
His eyes didn't meet mine.
Maybe you need to answer the question.
I stared at him.
What?
Just answer the question.
I slumped back against the wall.
Look, I understand there was somebody lying by the tracks, but I think that must have been me. I woke up in Medicine Bow, the train had already left, and so I hitched a ride till I got to Umsutter, where they were refueling. When I tried to get back on, the rail bull here knocked me out with that damn sap and cuffed me to this railing. Now, will somebody please tell me what's going on?
Marv Leland is dead. I wasn't sure I'd heard him correctly.
What?
They found a man missing an arm, is what they said. Marv Leland was found on the tracks at Fort Fred Steele, shot.
When I didn't say anything, Lucian continued. Now, where have you been for the last few hours?
Laughing, I shook my head.
Wait.
I looked around at the four of them.
You think I killed him?
They didn't say anything, just stood there looking down at me.
You've got to be kidding.
I yanked on the cuffs, grabbed the rail and tried to stand tall.
Where's George McKay?
What's McKay got to do with this?
He's the one who saw me get off the train, and I'm pretty sure he's the one who hit me with a piece of railroad tie and left me for dead on the ground back in Medicine Bow. Whatever happened on this train after that, I had nothing to do with.
Have you got anybody else who can vouch for you?
A whole bar full of people back at the Shiloh Saloon who helped clean me up and get me a ride west so that I could catch up with the train. I was just walking up when Holland here sapped me. And I'm going to tell you that I'm pretty damn fed up with people hitting me from behind.
With that, I gave one strong heave and yanked the railing from the wall, allowing it to slip from the cuffs and land in my hand. I swung it up onto my shoulder with both hands like a baseball bat.
In case you haven't noticed, I don't have my weapon. Did anybody think to check our berth and see if it was there?
They glanced at one another. I glared at them and stuck my cuffed wrist out to the railroad man.
You want these back?
Uncuffed, I started for the dining car.
Let's go to our suite.
and then have a word with McKay. Finally getting to our rooms, I stepped in and reached up to collect our weapons from the upper cabinet. As I handed them to my boss, I thought I caught a whiff of a familiar scent, and was now more than a little worried. He flipped loose the leather strap on my coat and pulled it from the holster. Dropping the magazine, he sniffed the barrel before turning and looking at the others.
"Hasn't been fired,"
Holland mumbled. "Doesn't mean a damn thing. We don't know what kind of weapon was used."
"Well, it wasn't mine."
I grabbed my horsehide coat, slipped it on, and then knocked on the door of the compartment adjacent. We stood there waiting, and as I started to knock again, Kim LeClerc opened the door. She had a sleeping mask on her forehead and was dressed in a full-length bathrobe, which I was surprised did nothing to showcase her impressive bosom.
"You lose your key?"
She pushed the mask back a little more and looked at us for a moment before shutting the door in our faces, her voice sounding through the wood panels.
"What the hell do you people want?"
"We're looking for Sheriff McKay."
"Well, if you find him, tell him to sleep somewhere else. He's not welcome here."
I leaned against the door.
"So he's not in there with you?"
"No, he most certainly is not."
"When did you see him last?"
There was noise from inside the berth, and I thought for a moment she might be covering for him.
"How the hell should I know?"
"Miss LeClerc, were you awake when we stopped in Medicine Bow?"
She leaned against the jamb and opened the door wide, now with the bedspread wrapped around her, so that we could see that there was no one else inside.
"Was that the last stop?"
"Actually, the one before that." She produced a cigarette from who knew where. Placing it between her lips, she continued to talk, her tobacco and whiskey-darkened voice reminding me of nightclubs and questionable times.
"Who the hell can tell where we are? This train seems to stop every 20 minutes.
"So you haven't seen him since Medicine Bow?"
"I suppose."
"4 hours ago."
"Like I said, I suppose. I've been asleep, you know. It's a thing most normal people do this time of night, deputy."
With that, she closed the door. I turned to the assembled posse. After our altercation in the parlor car earlier this evening, I met Sheriff McKay trackside in Medicine Bow when I got off to get some air. The conversation we had led me to believe he was not quite ready to let bygones be bygones. Later, as I was attempting to re-enter the train, someone struck me from behind and left me there on the tracks. For obvious reasons, I'm assuming it was Sheriff McKay, and now that he doesn't seem to be around, I'm even more assured of that theory.
Holland looked at the others.
"Is there anyone that can confirm what you're saying?"
I threw a thumb toward the front of the train.
"The engineer and his brakeman up in the locomotive. I went and talked with him."
"Why?"
"I couldn't sleep and I was curious. I'm funny that way."
I leaned in a little, pretty sure that if I put my mind to it, I could throw the railroad man through the nearest window in one try.
"Look, Holland, if you've got something more to say, then just say it, because we're going to have to search this train from one end to the other, find George McKay, and get some answers."
He stared at me for a moment and then turned and gestured for Phelps and Brown to follow him.
"We'll start at the front. The two of you start at the rear, and we'll meet back here. But don't you think I'm not going to radio up to the engineer and check your story?"
"Knock yourself out. Unless you need my help."
"It started with a heart attack, but then we discovered cancer of the pancreas, which is much worse, being one of the more belligerent carcinomas. And this one is one of the more aggressive varieties."
The prison doctor, Robertson, crossed his leg, resting a powder-blue stockinged ankle on his knee and bobbing a loafer.
"I don't know how familiar you are with human anatomy.
I've never been shot in the pancreas." He'd agreed to talk to me without seeming very happy about it, and from his behavior I was pretty sure he rated me as a somewhat unintelligent rural gunsel.
"If that's what you're asking."
He studied me.
"It's a glandular organ behind the stomach. There are a number of different kinds of pancreatic cancer, but his, like about 85% of the cases, is pancreatic adenocarcinoma, a cancer that affects the portion of the organ that produces digestive enzymes."
I leaned forward on my stool and rested my elbows on my knees.
"Were you his regular doctor over at the prison?"
"No, Dr. Howe is his general physician there. They run a clinic on a daily basis, and I come in once a week to follow up on anything that looks more serious. My work is mostly here, in Cheyenne.
He waited for me to speak, and when I didn't, he continued.
I mean, to be honest, he's been there so long I think everybody just ignored him until he was found on the floor.
The young man stood and ran a hand through imaginary hair as he looked out the hospital window toward the rail yard.
When somebody took a look, though, it was textbook. Really. Yellowing of the skin and loss of appetite. There really aren't any symptoms in the early stages, so that by the time a diagnosis is made, even in the least severe cases, it's too late and has spread to other parts of the body.
He grimaced at me. He's riddled with it.
I took off my hat and glanced around the lab where I'd tracked the doctor down.
Causes?
Smoking, obesity, diabetes, and certain genetic traits. A crapshoot, really, but in his case, the diabetes was a factor, that and HIV. He turned to look at me. Don't be surprised. It is a prison, after all.
I rolled the brim of my hat in my hands.
So what are his prospects? Quite bad, actually. After being diagnosed with this particular strain, only 25% survive a year, only 5% survive 5 years. But given how advanced his is, I guess he'll be dead in 2 weeks at the absolute most.
He leaned against the counter and folded his arms.
You're the one who arrested him, I mean, back then?
Yep. He's been in Rawlins since 1973.
He pulled out his cell phone, looked at it, and then returned it to his pocket. I must admit that when you contacted me, I did a little research on you. I looked at him. I've read a number of interviews you've given, and I'm impressed by the philosophical response you have to your chosen occupation and to human nature.
I smiled. For a sheriff?
No, I don't mean it that way at all. He swallowed. At the risk of getting myself into trouble, you seem to have preserved your humanity, which I would imagine is difficult in your line of work.
Why would that thought get you in trouble?
I'm about to get to that part.
He gestured in the patient's general direction.
He's going to die, if not in hours and days.
I stood, pulled my hat back on, and walked over to the window, my back to him. He stood up and moved a couple of steps toward me.
You don't think that there might be some mitigating circumstance that,
short of miraculously being discovered innocent? I continued to look at the rail yard. No. What we are concerned with here is the appropriate punishment for multiple murders. Capital punishment is an extreme sanction that would perhaps have been suitable for this most extreme of crimes, but we make mistakes, and taking another life due to human error is the worst we can do in a society based on law. And even if we get it right, killing the killer is not going to bring back the victims. I paused, and I guess he thought I was through, but I wasn't. Not by a long shot. But if a defendant is judged to be guilty and sentenced to life without parole, he should die in prison. That's the meaning of the sentence. In my experience, a sentence of life without parole allows survivors to move on. I'm sure that the victim's families long ago gave up the thought that anyone would ever voluntarily release him, no matter what the circumstance. Imagine what this would do to them. No. Life in prison without parole means dying in prison, Doctor.
He looked at his loafers. I'm in the business of keeping people alive, Sheriff. No matter who they are or what they've done.
Seeing we had an irreconcilable difference of perspective and figuring I'd gotten everything I was going to get from him, I turned and walked toward the door. You and Jean-Paul Sartre, tell that to the victim's friends and families, would you?
Why the hell would anybody kill Marv Leland?
I adjusted my gun belt over my shoulder as we moved through the parlor car. It felt kind of silly looking for McKay beneath the tables, behind the bar itself and under the piano. But you never knew. Maybe he was onto something, or someone. Sheriff Connolly put a hand on my arm in an attempt to slow me down.
What's that supposed to mean?
I stood at the center of the empty car and looked around. I sighed and looked down at him.
That conversation I had with Leland in the observation car?
Yeah.
I weighed the thing in my mind. I wasn't sure if I wanted to show all my cards to anybody just yet. He mentioned something about what you and Sheriff Eldridge were discussing earlier. He shook his head, and I made a decision. I needed at least one other person on my side. Supposedly, somebody's been cleaning up messes all over the state without jurisdiction. He thought about it and scrunched his eyebrows together.
You mean that lynching in Albany County?
Among other incidents not strictly within the purview of the law. I studied him. Sheriff, has anything like that happened in our county? Any unexplained homicides of individuals you'd just as well see dead? His chestnut eyes narrowed.
What are you asking me?
I'm asking if you're involved in this somehow. Leland was pretty well convinced that it was more than one sheriff. He called it a cabal. And before this goes any further, I want to know if you're involved. There was a long silence. I've only known you well for a few weeks, Sheriff. And even with that limited knowledge, I know you're willing to work outside the law to get things done. So I'm going to ask you one more time, and if I'm not satisfied with your answer, I'll just do this myself. His mouth set, and I could see he was thinking about how he was going to respond to his subordinate or whether he was going to answer at all.
I've had suspicions, but I haven't shared them with anybody.
That doesn't answer my question. His face turned a lively crimson, and he exploded just as I expected he would.
Well, if you'll shut up for a damn minute, I'll answer your damn question.
He stood there, then turned and looked straight at me.
No, I don't have anything to do with this, whatever it is.
Satisfied for the moment, I fumbled with my book. Sheriff Leland gave me a list of all the unsolved murders that have taken place in the last 3 years. Finding nothing inside the Agatha Christie, I searched through the rest of my pockets in an attempt to find the piece of paper. I swear I had it in my... I took a deep breath and settled myself. Somebody must have taken it. Probably the same person who hit me in the head and left me for dead. Lucian looked a little doubtful.
A list?
I had doubts myself when Leland was telling me about it. But it seems that someone, or a collection of someones, has been moving around the state, systematically killing who it was they suspected in some very nasty cases. At least, that's how it was relayed to me. He looked a little incredulous.
And Marv spoke with you about this?
He did. And now he's dead. He shook his head slowly.
Why would he talk to you?
I studied my new boss. Because he thought a sheriff or a group of sheriffs were doing this. And I'm not a sheriff. I've only been back in country for a month, so I'm the only one who couldn't be involved. He needed a fresh set of eyes.
And now somebody else has that list.
Yep. I didn't entirely believe him when he was telling me about it. But I'm beginning to now. I rubbed a hand across my face. Maybe if I'd taken him a little more seriously, he'd still be alive.
And you think it's McKay?
He was the only one trackside in Medicine Bow.
You think he killed Marv?
Well, he sure seems unaccounted for as of late. He licked his upper lip and looked toward the back of the train.
Let me ask you something. If you'd kill somebody, would you still be on this train?
I answered honestly.
No, neither would I. But that doesn't mean we won't keep looking, huh?
He moved out ahead of me, shifting his gun belt from his shoulder and slipping it around his middle, where he buckled it up and adjusted the holster with a thumb.
Let's go.
Following his lead, I buckled my Sam Brown around my hips and tried to keep up as we pushed open the door and re-entered the dining car where Marv Leland and I had had our conversation. I can't think that there would be that many places to hide on a train.
That's according to how bad you want to disappear. Whoever took the list doesn't want anybody to know about this. And the only reason I can think that they might have let you live was because they thought you were dead
and because they were in a big hurry to get back on. You were not the primary target in this deal.
I didn't think I was.
Yeah, but if there's anything to this sheriff's cabal, they know you're alive now, and know what Marv knew, and they're going to want you dead, too.
He took one side, and I took the other, as we worked our way through the car toward the back.
That's comforting. Just don't let anybody get you alone somewhere until we get this sorted out.
So far, you're the only one I trust. He pushed open the door and continued on toward the caboose, throwing me a grin over his shoulder as the cold air blasted between us.
If I was in your place in these self-same circumstances, deputy, I'm not so sure I'd even do that.
Chapter 7. The battered planet and stars blanket wrapped around her shoulders, Katie peeked in at the three of us from the kitchen. Another newspaper called. I nodded and kept playing grab the finger with the diminutive love of my life as Dog watched. Well, that didn't take long, did it? We were sitting on the new red leather sofa and were ignoring the world. Three more on the answering machine. I stood and, hoisting Lola up on a hip, carried her to where the good smells were coming from, Dog following closely behind. This may turn into a real mess before it's all over. She turned and looked at me. I guess they're going with the full court press attack. I smiled at the play on words. Who? The governor's wife? It would appear she's holding a press conference about it tomorrow afternoon. And I think you should go.
To somebody else's press conference?
I occupied my granddaughter with my index finger. I don't even like going to my own. Listen, Dan, and I'm not joking. You make an impression. Just go and stand there against the wall, and don't say anything. It'll scare the shit out of everybody, trust me. Katie went back to stirring. And don't take Uncle Lucian. She added onions. Take Henry and Vic. They're the only ones on the planet scarier than you.
Uh-huh.
Lola gnawed on my finger. One of the newspapers was there at the hospital, taking pictures of him as I was leaving. She made a face as she added tomatoes to the mixture she'd been sautéing in the frying pan. Great, that'll look good in the morning edition and get the public on his side. Did they see you?
Yep.
Let me guess, no comment?
Good thing Lucian wasn't there or they would have gotten plenty.
Where are the rest of the musketeers? Checking records to see if they can come up with some of the victim's surviving family members to give a little credence to our cause. I sat Lola on the corner of the island, my arm around her waist. Katie pulled the blanket more tightly around her shoulders. Wasn't this all happening right after you and Mom got married? Where was she doing all of this? I kept Lola in place as Dog sat on my foot.
We were fighting.
About? Lola reached out for Dog's big muzzle and giggled as he licked her hands.
Nothing, really.
She sidled over and bumped me with her hip. Why did it take so long for you guys to get around to having me, anyway? It took me a moment to respond. I was doing my best. Your mother just wasn't cooperating. I thought about the missing member of our little circle, and felt a familiar sorrow come over me as it always did when I thought about being robbed of her company. I also thought about the secrets that had remained between the two of us, and the things that Martha had chosen to share with our daughter and the things she hadn't. I didn't think it was the time or place to reveal them now.
If she were here, she'd say let him go.
Katie returned to the stove. If she were here, she'd compliment me on that magnificent homemade pasta on the counter over there.
I was impressed.
How did you do that? The machine you bought me last Christmas. There was another pause as I switched directions in the backfield.
Oh, that machine.
It's all right. I figured Henry picked it out. She stirred the sauce and then offered me a taste. I'm making so much of this stuff I think I'm going to need a pasta intervention. I took a spoonful from the ladle, and it was marvelous.
The effect of the Moretti in-laws.
Probably. She watched me with the cool, nickel-plated eyes I'd given her. Yeah, if Mom were here, She'd tell you to let it go. She stirred some more. It's not that he isn't guilty, Daddy, but what are you giving up? A few days, a week?
Freedom. I'd be giving him his freedom, something I swore would never happen. She nodded, unknowingly compressing her lips in an exact imitation of her mother.
You may not have a choice.
I spoke under my breath. No, but I can gum up the works till he's dead.
Wow.